finance comes into this business, and you know, the precursor of the fact that the three times he came to interview with this company, the CFO was sick. So he's not, assuming he's not dumb, he realizes there's some issue, especially because the CFO has made some mention that he won't be continuing on after whatever the credit is rewritten or whatever. So I think this is called the CEO knows that there's issues in this company. He's got broad shoulders. He's got access to other talent. And I think, you know, he's using this issue that came up with the fact that, you know, they're not meeting, potentially violating the covenants of a loan. And he wants to make that public to the board. And also, I would assume, work with the creditors to say, okay, we're on the edge, or we violated covenants, which is a pretty serious thing to deal with. But he has a plan how he's going to recover this thing, and he wants to move through clean. And probably in the back of the head, he's going to have to take out several of his adopted leadership team. So the fact that the CFO goes behind him, meets with one of the board members to come up with a path forward that's contradictory to the CEO, just means that somebody needs to go. And so he calls a board meeting, which is the right thing to do as chairman. They've got a half hour, which is unfortunate because maybe the board members will want to know, is there more information? But I think he just basically needs to summarize the position of the company and what he recommends going forward. If I was him, I'd probably give the CFO some time to have the counter case, and then I'd let the board vote, knowing that if the vote is in favor of the CFO, I'm leaving. But if the vote's in his favor, then they'll take the risk to manage with the creditors this covenant violation. And at the same time, he'll accept the resignation from a few of his direct reports, bring in some new staff, and move forward. A little harsh, but that's our summary.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We didn't kill anybody.
The next team is Brian, Ed, Mindy, and Monica.
Oh, wonderful. So we had a very similar summary, John. You know, we thought the CEO, even though it's only been 10 days, probably in his due diligence would have understood that there were some operational issues, you know, coming into the company. Probably didn't realize that this tranche would be pulled down so quickly, and so was using this as an opportunity to bring this all to light and have a board meeting. We thought that as he went into the board meeting, he should remind everyone of their fiduciary responsibility. And maybe down the road, it seems like potentially there's one or two board members that have conflict of interest. And so that would be part of the plan that you talked about, was that, you know, right-sizing the company first, looking at, you know, getting operations sort of back on track, probably talking a little bit about who should be on this board, preparing the whole company then for this private equity round that he wants to do down the road, right? And so this is sort of just one of the bumps, and they hired him specifically for this reason, probably knowing that there was going to be some pushback from the you know, current senior management team, and that although they had been told they weren't going to be there post-funding, they probably needed to be let go earlier because they're sort of acting up, they're not being professional. So we agreed with sort of all of the stuff that you guys were saying. I don't think there's anything. Team, did I miss anything?
No, I think you're spot on, and John did an excellent job of being very direct and honest. So we're aligned with you, John. Good work.
Good.
Next team. It's getting down to 74 degrees in Michigan, so it's getting chilly out here.
Next team is Babs, Collins, George, and Mary Ellen.
Okay, I'm the spokesman for our team, and we had very similar analysis as the other two groups. We reviewed that there are a lot of the board members that have conflicts of interest, and that a lot of them seem to be putting their own interests ahead of that of the company and other, other shareholders who aren't represented on the board, if there are others. We talked a little bit about why some of these people are on the board. We talked about it's good to have some people who are from outside the industry, that this is a highly regulated industry, the people who, you know, have good background on the industry. One was a revenue chief chief revenue officer somewhere else, the financial advisor have what look like good backgrounds, but they're very conflicted in how they're looking at the situation. Basically, it comes down to the idea to ask the CEO to sign this carefully crafted drawdown ambiguous capital request is, you know, is fraud. And being in a regulated industry, if he were to agree to do that, which it seems he's not inclined to do, which is good, you know, his and the company's reputation are going to be toast when it gets found out, because these things do get found out. So, you know, we said there are big two issues here. One, the bigger, maybe a bigger issue, is getting people off the board who are conflicted and don't understand fiduciary duty. But the immediate issue is, you know, what's happening at this put together board meeting. And I think, you know, we came to, without talking about how the meeting should be run that others have talked about, which I think we would agree with, just speaking for the sentiment of what we talked about, is that if the CEO doesn't get what he wants, which is to, you know, put this drawdown on hold, be renegotiate whatever's necessary on the financing, that he's going to have to resign to protect his own interest. And that'll send a message to everybody else that's involved, the financial syndicate, when the CEO resigns,
yep,
they'll put on the brakes, hopefully. So
last group is Cynthia, John, Linda, and Mark.
I'm the spokesperson for this brain trust. So Linda, Cynthia, and John. I'm going to start by quoting Cynthia, actually, who said, "If you're not open and honest with your bank, you're screwed." That was kind of where we started. And we said that this case was more about culture than it was about funding. And that as a new CEO, he has a great deal of latitude. And one of the things that we would recommend to him is to exercise that latitude and fire the COO immediately. CFO is a different story. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But as all of you mentioned, one of the things that the CEO recommend do is to negotiate with the bank and to explain to the bank that as someone with an operations background, he sees the opportunity to make operational improvements in the company, and that though they've fallen behind, he's confident that they're going to get to a better position. With regard to the financial advisor, our recommendation was that she recuse herself because of the conflicts. It may be that she's not going to last long, but at least for the moment, we need to take her out of the board discussion. Although our advice to the CEO is to talk with her and to understand what she's seeing and why she's recommending this deal, even though it does seem like there are some ethical issues there, that she may have some perspective that could be helpful to him. Also, as near as we could tell, there are six board members, so it would be helpful for him to talk to the other four board members before the meeting and explain to them that this is an ethics issue, and that part of the reason he was hired was because he had a reputation for being a highly ethical person and building good relationships with banks, and that it's not just a personal ethics issue, it's an issue for the company and what the company stands for. He can use this conflict as a way to plant a stake in the ground with the board and say, this is what I'm all about. You hired me for a reason. And that reason actually, ironically, came up right away. And I will always be open and honest and transparent. We may want to offer some incentives to the CFO to stay, because we want to have a smooth transition. Obviously, the CFO has a limited lifespan with this company, but at the moment, we may want to have them be part of the team, even on an interim basis. And that's true with the local manager, too. We don't know enough about the local manager to to be able to assess their role in all of this. They may have been bullied by the other members, but again, this is an opportunity for the CEO to say, I understand operations, and I believe that fixing the operational issues is a priority for me. That's my background. And since this is the first board meeting, it's an opportunity for him to get a common understanding about what this company stands for. Almost done. And for the financial advisor, it may make sense for him to already have in mind somebody to replace this current financial advisor, because there are lots of questions about her, the incentives deal that she has and how that was negotiated, and certainly something that he wouldn't want to continue. Anything anybody else would like to add? Anything I forgot?
You covered it well.
Yeah. Good talk.
Good. Greg, you want to react to the reactions, please?
Well, I'm very interested. First of all, thank you everybody for your comments. I think I'm going to go back and talk about timing a little bit more, so that everybody understands the compressed time, and also understands why we're at where we're at. Give you some context. In late 1996, late part of the century, Congress wanted to stimulate competition between the telephone companies. Think of Bell Telephone, long distance telephone companies, AT&T, MCI, and Sprint. And then the cable companies, like Cox Cable or Comcast, all right? And all these have been silos, and they've had their own monopoly, and so now they're going to break it down. Well, this is several years after that. It takes a while to get through the, for the competition to get out there. And there were 50 to 100 companies that were that had jumped in, gotten cable license in the different cities, and were around the nation looking for financial partners. So there was a lot of stress on finding capital and a lot of stress on finding talent, right? And when the talent issue, you notice that the, you don't know this, but the CFO, the search had been on for 6 months to replace the CFO. And so it was fortunate. He was more, he had good skills. He was a good man, but he was more at the division controller level, all right? Mm-hmm. So that's why he was still around. So going back to what happened with the, all this competition. We went from, you know, what you all probably know that you, when this started, the increase in competition started. Your parents, your grandparents probably had black telephone sets still. Your parents may have had a black telephone set. You had just moved over to the Princess phone. And if you had a cellular phone, it's probably the size of a brick. So that's what you had. That's what we were coming from. And look at it today. Today we're in Larry's global Zoom conference room, virtual room. You may have Alexa, like I had to holler at Alexa a while ago. She was out of control. You may have Alexa listening to your conversations at home, right? And by the way, I used an AI poem generator yesterday for my wife's, to generate one for my wife's birthday, which is tomorrow. So we've come a long way. On a technical side, the social.
Are you going to share that with us?
Yeah, sure. I'll read it. We've come a long way. The social side, I think, needs a lot more work. But we've outrun a lot of our capabilities anyway. So that is one aspect of where we were at that time, and you can look back and know where you were. So then, along comes this search. This our CEO, let's call him our CEO, comes in and he's on his ninth day, and he just happens to be walking by an office, and he sees these three guys huddling. They're out at the pilot city, and that's when he discovers that they're crafting a letter for him to sign, which I, as George, as somebody said, was fraud, and I agree with that. So he talks to the CFO. The CFO also talks to the financial advisor, The financial advisor had an outsized role because he was on the board. You don't normally find them on the board. He'd invested in the company, so there's where the board seat came from. But every time the phone rang, he was in a conversation with the CFO or the management team. He was probably the number one person to go to on a lot of these things, a lot of the discussion. And his advice was to our CEO, sign the letter. It won't matter. You know, we'll get through this. No, there won't be any problem. And it's not a big issue. You don't need to tell the board. That was his issue. They happened to be in the same city as the senior partner who had guaranteed the loan, had given a $10 million loan to this LLC. And he was the one that was behind the gave a wink and a nod to the debt provider also. So he's the big man at the table in this board, not the financial advisor or even the founder at this stage. The founder had done a very good job, and it also had another in structuring the company, and it had another partner who was a nationwide wireless network. They'd invested $1 million there. So before our CEO left town, he had gotten the support of both strategic partners, right? And if you know that one of them came from a telecom company and one of them came from a utility, there is no way that they're going to be signing their note or endorse the board to defraud, if you want to use that term, to defraud the financial company, the debt provider. All right, so... Also, while he was out there, he hadn't left town yet, coming back to his headquarters. While our CEO was out there, he also talked to the founder and he talked to the vice chairman. So there was four votes that he had wrapped up before he even got on the plane, right? So it wasn't an issue of going back and convincing a heck of a lot of people, because once they heard that utility company and the network was behind it, that everybody was going to fall in line. All right. So that's what happened at the board meeting. It wasn't a lot of discussion, no jumping up and down by anybody. They saw where the board was going. And so it didn't take very long to get their approval on resolution. And then I think they asked the CFO to step out and call the debt provider. And I understand that the company that was going to syndicate the loan, take half of it, posted the our CEO that night, because it just, you know, they dodged the bullet and would have created a certain situation that was difficult. It turns out that the operations teams missed it again. The next quarter, they missed their covenants also. But they got straight by the third quarter. The second quarter wasn't as bad, but it just didn't. It really showed that they weren't on top of their game. And yet, was why they were hired, that they were very good from the cable industry and laying coax and construction. So that got worked out later on. All right. So... that gets us to the board meeting. I've already jumped forward a little bit and told you that there wasn't an issue there. Is there anything else before I go past the board meeting the days after that? Any questions?
What happened with the COO?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. COO stayed, but he did our CEO a favor. You know, if you miss one time, that's okay. Maybe he was out sick. COVID, right? All those. But if you missed two times, and it was two times, not three, he was absent on both visits, right? So he showed the CFO that he wasn't the guy that wanted to work with him. And he was the one that was angry and thinking he should have been the CEO. Okay. And he, in fact, when those three came over, they, to an extent, they brought their culture with them. And you would think that, because there was four or five. There's four other people, accounting analysts, those type of folks that came over to HR person. And they to an extent, the board recognized that they were to an extent were creating headwinds for the CEO, for the founder, right? Which you would think they'd gotten in their head that they were the big men on the block, right? So, any other questions other than did that answer your question, Mark, on the COO?
But did the COO stay?
What? Which time frame? Yes, the COO stayed. All right.
Did he get fired after missing two seasons of Death Covenant?
No.
No. And one more question, sorry. What did they do about the financing? Did they negotiate with the bank that, you know, like a temporary stop on this very tight covenant? Or how did the conversation between the CFO and the debt provider go?
Well, the CFO, he wasn't, because he didn't have the street skills, he wasn't as dominant in these conversations. It was a financial advisor, and the fact that the senior representative from the utility said, we're going to back them. They're the ones that we guaranteed the $10 million bridge loan, and we're going to support them on getting this straight. So it really didn't come to that type of conversation. It was a little bit more in a closer knit group.
But they came clean, and that was the thing that we, in our group, we said they had to do right away.
Absolutely. I don't think there's anybody in this room, knowing those that do, that would have signed that letter.
Right. It's Cynthia was saying it was a reputation not only of the founder, the company, the CEO, even the debt provider. They're all affected.
Yeah. It'd be a stain. It wouldn't leave you. And you would be very ineffective. You would have to, you would be very, I think you, from my limited experience with the street, I think we, that person would have been very ineffective dealing with the street from then on.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Where am I on timing, Larry? Do I have a few more minutes?
Sure. Absolutely. You were going to talk about it after the board meeting.
I'm sorry?
You were also going to talk about what happened after the board meeting.
Yeah, I will. So what happened to this company? Remember, the CEO was, our CEO was just as conflicted as ever. Every single person on that board was conflicted. They either owned stock or they invested, right? And they had a lot riding. So our CEO had 33% of the stock, wasn't going to be, he was going to lose 33% of the stock if he didn't get funding of $25 million within a year. All right, so that was the deal. They went out and came back with $100 million. Now, usually when you go out for a number, you come back with something less.
Yeah.
But again, going back to the context of where we are with all these companies racing around, getting private equity firms to back them, and then finding the talent, the found a blue chip partner. I'd run into them when I was in another role at someplace else. The founder ran into them directly, and led them back to his firm, and they were immediately, they were on the phone jumping with us, and they wanted to be our partner. But it was John or somebody said he might not meet them in heaven, all right? Hopefully you get to heaven, but if there's a dime on the table, it's not going in your pocket. That's all I'll tell you. So came back with $100 million. After the first board meeting, under when it was restructured, the founder left, the vice chair left with the new influx of capital. The board was restructured and went from like 10. There were a couple other people around that weren't listed. Went from like 10 down to 7, and the private equity firm held 2 in their pocket. So it was really a 5-person board with 2 in the pocket. They came back told our CEO that they did not have enough equity to fund the plan for 20 cities. that we're going to build a region over 20 cities. Again, secondary and tertiary markets, partnering with utilities. That was what the advantage of this guy's strategy was. I thought it was very good. So they came back and said, well, you've got to go out and collect more. And so they made some phone calls. And as you know, when a private equity firm makes a phone call for you, it's a little different than you going out and taking your bag up and down the street like we've seen others do. So they came back with another 235. So looking for 25 million, let's say May, June, by February, they'd signed for 325 million. However, the last 225 million were never, they were in the house, it was committed, but it was not in the house, but it was committed, ready to go. And you may remember that the world tanked around that time, and the fiber glut. You've heard of the fiber glut? So that's what happened. Everybody, there were a number of bankruptcies, and this company was one of the few that was EBITDA positive. So over time, it went into hibernation, and after a while, it was merged with another company. And today, you have companies that look like it, and they're called Verizon Files. Anybody have Files at home? Right? Or at Xfinity. So that's what all this came down to. I'm giving you a messy version of what transpired. Have I missed anything? Any questions?
Greg?
Thank you.
Any lessons learned?
Yeah. I didn't capture for you the role of the financial advisor enough. The financial advisor should have just only had one role, and that was full speed ahead, go out and help us find funding, right? Instead, she was also picked up the role of leading up the search team. And so that was the distraction. When we needed her, the company needed her to be straightforward, 100% of her efforts. All right. By the way, this case is the composition of multiple instances. So everything is alleged and hypothetical. Okay. Just so we know, in case anybody's has some other views. Larry, so let's look at that board. The if it was to be done over, the financial advisor could go her way and be out leading the charge for searching for funds, and the vice chair could have picked up the search for the next CEO, but it was all in one person, and so there was the dilution of her efforts. I think that that would be one thing that would be that a board. The size in a company of this size, which was early stage and small and before, strong committees were built up. Weren't any committees at all, I believe, except maybe the impromptu one for the search team. So that would be the lessons learned for a small company like this. And secondly, I guess on any board, if it's got a committee structure, then probably those things work themselves out because they're dividing up the work. But it wasn't divided up here. Also, conflicts of interest were, I guess, maybe in a firm like this, you're happy that everybody's invested in it and has some skin in the game. But there were conflicts abound on. Everyone was conflicted. And you want to not have that in all these cases. CFO. The CFO shouldn't have been around at this stage. But we remember they just couldn't find talent. And there were a number, the search firm was getting tired of bringing people in. I say that, they didn't say that, but you could tell from watching their actions. And we were fortunate that the CFO would stick around and just do the basic financials. There were times when this management team would go back out and have three presentations a week. You know, you fly out to one city and come back and change. Make some changes to the financials, fly out to another city, and then back. And so, And at the same time, you're running, trying to run an operation that's got 22,000 customers and building out thousands, hopefully building out thousands of miles of construction in fiber.
Yep.
Okay. Any other question?
I mean, one thing a comment that I had listening to the different groups, Cynthia, John, Linda, and Mark's group were the only group that basically were very explicit about the CEO should privately talk to each of the board members before the board meeting. And the other groups really just talked about having the board meeting. And it's always my contention that if you're a CEO and you're dealing with the board, no vote should ever be a surprise. You should be talking to the board before the votes individually, get a sense of what the board's gonna do. But don't bring it to the board and then wonder what the vote's gonna be. That's not a good way to handle it, at least my point of view.
I think that's a good point. Because I failed to emphasize the transparency, which is part of his reason he called the board, was so that everybody would have the same information and know that this new CEO, who had never met them as a group, he talked to some of them on the phone, some of them he visited, transparency was part of his goal, and I agree with you. I don't know how much he did about, you know, by the time he left town, he had 5 votes. By the time he left the pilot city, I don't know how many of the others he had talked to. But the financial guy, also the financial board member, she knew. So there's 6. So there was a number, but you're probably right. There's probably 1 or 2 that were missed.
Yep. Any other comments from anybody in the room about this case?
Just one more question. We talked a lot about the CEO using this to his advantage, coming in as a new board member. You know, he has leeway. He has the audience. Did he use this as a platform at all to establish what he's all about, or was it just about the debt?
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand. Was it just about the debt at this particular day, or are you talking about during his couple years there?
Oh, at the beginning, at this board meeting, we were saying it's only 30 minutes, but you've got to kind of set the stage about what you have seen so far in your 7 or 8 days there. In a nice way, they have to kind of know what he's facing.
Yeah.
If they don't.
Well, I don't know I don't know that he knew about the abandonment rate and the poor customer care at that stage.
Okay.
All right. He'd had 1 trip in there. And there was from I will. Okay. Just so you know, I asked George and Brian to review this with me so that I wouldn't run off the guardrails and get too excited and ramble on tonight. So if I say anything wrong, you can look at those two.
Oh, yeah.
Blame them, but I wanted to publicly thank them.
Our group had, I think, assumed the board was much more willing to go along to get along, in that there was an opportunity for the CEO to take an ethical stand and pull them in with it, to use that as a lever for how he wanted to run things going forward. But he sounded like he didn't play that card because they were all willing to agree with him on the right thing.
Yeah. Larry, do I still have 2 minutes?
Sure.
All right, we've talked about the 9th and 10th day, right? This is all about this. On the 3rd day, one of the conflicted board members, and they're all conflicted, right? One of the conflicted board members pulled him aside, pulled the chairman, CEO, and president aside and said, look, we met somebody during this process. Now, again, this is a hypothetical. This is a hypothetical case. We met somebody during this process. And, you know, he'd make a good chairman because he has more contacts on Wall Street than you do. All right. And then, so then the question is, well, then why the hell isn't he in my position, right? Why did the CEO say, why isn't he in my position? Well, he happened to take a company to bankruptcy. And so he can't be the chief executive officer after having done that. And so that fits in with that chaos that was going on in the industry at that time. That's the second person in 2 years that our CEO ran into somebody who couldn't be in a role because he had taken another company into bankruptcy. And I guess it's an unwritten rule, and you wouldn't either. You wouldn't invest in a firm where a guy going into bankruptcy real easily, I don't think. But the CEO says, no, thank you, appreciate your advice, and moved on. And as you know, they were successful in getting funding 7 months later, 6 months later.
Yeah. I'm struck by the fact that I would have thought that more due diligence would have been done by the CEO before he took the role. I mean, for the stuff that's coming out in terms of who we talked to, or did he just really like the opportunity and want to be in the space?
What would he have found out, Mindy? By the way, Larry, I told Mindy not to, I had dinner with her, and I told her not to come to this. But anyway, here we go. Shows you how she pays attention to me. But go ahead.
You did. You told me not to come, and I said, that's my invitation.
Yeah.
You never, never tell
what do you think he would have found out?
That's the lesson learned.
Right. Sure. I mean, he took it. He did his homework. He decided whatever risks were there, he was going to jump in because it was an opportunity. And he was going to get 33%.
This was built as a growth opportunity.
That's what I mean.
And this thing about finding out about the missing the covenants, that wasn't known by the board or the founder. This is all a surprise. So you wouldn't have found that. What he was hearing before that, I think, was what he was hearing from the team is, oh, we got this great debt instrument, and we're rocking and rolling here. So I don't think that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it seems if this case has got, you know, some key pertinent facts, the fact that he overheard this conversation among the COO and the CFO was key. If he didn't and hadn't, you know, some other way found out about what was going on, he might have been misled into, you know, moving ahead with signing the letter.
He would have been misled, and the relationship with that utility was very important. They don't deal with people who are not truthful. They're always in front of the regulators. They're very straightforward. They're may not even have a good personality, but they're honest and truthful in many cases, most cases, in my experience.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions for Greg?
Greg case all around. Yes. Turns and ups and downs, and it was.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thanks, Greg.
I think the next step, Greg, is to turn this case into a movie.
Well, Larry, that's quite a compliment. I didn't think it was this good, but I'll take that.
No, it's very
George and Brian again.
I'll look for it on Netflix.
So, I'm sorry.
I'll look for it on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, now that would be nice.
That was a very rich case. I want to thank you all for attending. We look forward to seeing you next month, where we're going to have another case. And I want to give you just a heads up. In November, we're going to have a special program. It's the 5-year anniversary of the Market Basket case. And some of you in this room are just too young to remember the Market Basket case, but it was quite a doozy 10 years ago. And we're going to be talking about lessons learned from that case. Great. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you next month at Seat at the Table.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.